racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Hello and welcome to Inside Motorsport. I'm Craig Revell.
And I'm Colin Ford. And welcome to another edition of what is a very busy weekend in motorsport all around the world.
And we start with news first. We go to Monza, where Fabio Ravioli joins us on the line from the circuit, where the European touring cars are making their first round for 2001. And Fabio, how has qualifying gone so far this weekend?
Well, we've got Gabriele Tarquini, the former BTCC champion, in pole position for the Super Touring. He set a new record for this track at the wheel of his Honda Accord, and he will line up first in front of the Alfa Romeo boys. Nicola Larini will be second, and reigning European Super Touring Cup champion Fabrizio Giovanardi will be third.
In terms of the qualifying, how have the conditions been at the track at Monza for qualifying?
The qualifying were very good. I mean, sunshine and warm air. The track was perfect, and that's why Tarquini set the new record. And we also had qualifying for the Super Production, and a former Formula One driver, Gianni Morbidelli, set the pole in his BMW 320i. It was a total domination of BMW drivers who occupy the first four places on the grid. Behind Morbidelli, there are Peter Cox and German Norman Simon, and the fourth is the Swedish Pegan Anderson. The first non-BMW driver is Norwegian Tommy Rusted in a Nissan Primera, who is fifth.
One of the drivers who is driving there is the former Spanish champion, Luis Villamil, who is driving in Alfa Romeo. How did he do in qualifying?
Well, not very good. He's on the fifth line of the grid, because Alfa Romeo proved not powerful enough for this track that is very fast. At the moment, the BMW 6-cylinder has an advantage due to the regulation.
This race is the first of what is a growing championship for the European touring cars. As well, you have Volvo with Jan Nielsen there. How has Jan Nielsen gone in the qualifying?
Well, he was not bad at all. He's sixth on the grid, just behind Roberto Colciago's Audi. And Ian Nielsen was very, very satisfied, particularly because the track doesn't suit very much to his car, which is prepared for the Swedish tracks, which are twisty and very short.
Yeah, a big difference for a fast open track like Monza compared to the twisty tight tracks of Sweden.
Exactly. In terms of aerodynamics devices, you know, it makes a big difference.
Now, the first race for the championship is about 20 minutes from now. Now that the cars are preparing to come out onto the grid for that race?
Yes. 19 for the Super Touring. We start for the first race. And they will have the second race in the afternoon with a reverse grid. It means that the driver who will win the race will start from the back of the grid, and the last driver classified in the first race will sit on the pole.
This championship, with the combination of the Super Tourers and the Super Production, it is started out last year, I believe, and has grown quite well with a number of extra manufacturers and drivers and cars coming in for this first meeting at Monza.
Yes, I mean, we definitely expect to have the Super Production growing in the next race. The problem for Super Touring that it will be definitely the last season for this kind of cars. So we don't expect to have more cars on the other tracks. I mean, they should remain around 20 cars.
The thing they're looking at for next year is the possibility of going to regulations similar to what the British Touring Car Championship has introduced for this year?
Well, it's not yet clear. I mean, there is a group of seven manufacturers who's working on the new regulations, and they intend to present a proposal to the World Motorsport Council in June for the approval. But apparently the tendency is to have a new regulation which will be situated in the middle between the actual super production and the BTC regulations.
So it could produce some interesting cars, but the thing is, of course, to get the maximum number of manufacturers to compete in the championship.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as I told you, there are seven manufacturers already working on the problem, and of course the intention of the FIA and the organizers is to attract the most manufacturers as possible to have a sort of major league with the new regulations and to have a minor league with the super production teams.
Well, we wish you a good day's racing there at Monza today for the first round of the European Touring Car Championship, and hopefully we'll get some results later in the day to see who has won the races there today at Monza.
Okay, thank you very much, and thanks a lot, and I want to say hello to all our Australian fans.
All right, then. And Fabio, do you know how the GT has been going? Because, of course, it's on the same card as the Super Touring this round.
Yes, exactly. The GT race will start in 1 hour, just after the first Super Touring race.
And who's on the pole?
Sorry?
Who's on the pole?
Who's on the pole? Can you hold on a second, please? I don't have the times here.
All right, then. Well, while Fabio gets us that, it's been an interesting weekend in Formula One. Of course, it started with qualifying, and Jonathan Ledyard was there for all the action.
A case of minimum fuss for maximum effect. Schumacher's first pole in Brazil fully justified his claims to have the best car on the grid. The BMW Williams of brother Ralph and Juan Pablo Montoya carried the greatest threat. Who knows how close Montoya could have come if he'd not slewed off into a tire wall at 120 miles an hour early on. Largely, though, the world champion kept all comers at arm's length. Ralph Schumacher's front row place was a career best, likewise Montoya's fourth. Mika Hakkinen's third, a season's best. David Coulthard was fifth, but Rubens Barrichello disappointed his home following in sixth, although barely a tenth of a second separated second from sixth. The Jordans were seventh and eighth. Eddie Irvine just edged out his Jaguar teammate Luciano Berti in 13th. Jenson Button was two places down on Giancarlo Fisichella in 20th.
Basically put the qualifying situation in the last moment, and not too early. I guess that some people, particularly yesterday, were driving with low fuel level, and that makes the picture looking different to what is the normal facts. But we know pretty well from when we see lap times and we compare things where we stand, and we knew it would be tight, but we knew we had a chance, and finally we did it. And obviously it's a great pleasure to see my little one next to me.
Yeah, returning now to Monza. Of course, the GTs are running here today. Fabio, the grid for the top cars for the GTs running today, you mentioned earlier that they have a super pole on the Saturday for the top six cars. Can you tell us who is sitting on the pole for today's race?
Yeah, Christophe Bouchoux, the Frenchman, has had the best times in a Chrysler Viper. Indeed, there are four Chrysler Viper lining up in the first two rows of the grid, and fifth will be the first NGT driver, who is Jürgen von Garsen in a Porsche. And Emanuele Naspetti was expected to fight for the pole at the wheel of a Ferrari 550, but he spun during this qualifying lap, and so he just will line up seventh on the grid.
So not as well as he would have liked to do, particularly with a Ferrari in Italy.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But I am convinced that the Ferrari can be a factor in the race, and it will be very, very competitive. And it is the word to say that the reigning GT champion Julian Bailey in the Lister Storm didn't take part in the Super Bowl session because the team was working on the car, and they couldn't finish in time to hit the track for the Super Bowl. So Julian Bailey will line up 12th.
And that's probably something that he would not prefer to have happened. He would have preferred to be no doubt fighting for the pole, but the Lister GT is an effective car, and no doubt he'll probably do well during the race.
Yes, definitely, definitely. Bailey has been the fastest in the first qualifying session anyway.
Well, Fabio, before I let you go, I have a quick question for you, and that is, how has Italy reacted to Australia buying one of your Formula One teams?
Yes, of course, we are confident that this deal can save Minardi and can let them to stay in Formula One for a long time. Of course, I can tell you that the reaction should be much worse if an Australian had bought Ferrari.
Well, it's been a pleasure to speak to you today, and we wish everyone all the very best for a safe day at Monza.
Okay, thank you very much, and have a nice day in Australia.
We will do indeed. Fabio Ravioli joining us there on the line from Monza, and we do appreciate his time. Of course, in Australian motorsport now, if I can take the lead here, Colin, Possum Bourne has powered his Subaru Impreza World Rally car to a dominant victory on the second heat of the Respect Yourself Forest Rally. Shades of 2000 became evident from the first stage when Paul Bourne powered away Heat 1 winner Neil Bates. The eventual margin, an outstanding 1 minute 35 seconds. Now, whilst Bourne dominated the day in the outright placings, a battle royal was waged between the leading Group N competitors, Cody Croker and Ed Ordinski. Croker eventually pulling clear on the day's later stages to finish 11 seconds up on Ordinski. The role reversal in the top placings from Heat 1 to Heat 2 adds interest to the event. Bourne and Bates tied for first place, Croker and Ordinski tied for third. That's four crews on the podium at the finish of the event, and we will speak, I hope, to some of those crews later on in this program.
Well, mentioning Possum Bourne, of course, the Subaru Rally of Canberra, which is on the 4th or 6th of May, they're calling for members to join the volunteer team that helps put the rally together. The organisers of the Rally of Canberra are looking for a range of different people to help out in positions such as control, security, spectator marshals, rally office assistants, headquarters officials, equipment marshals, flags and service park marshals, and more. And for those people who had signed on before the 30th of March, there was the opportunity for one of them to actually get a ride in the Subaru with Possum Bourne. But on top of that, if people do want to become volunteers, they get great incentives, including Silverstone volunteer merchandise, a gift from Subaru Australia, free spectator pass to all Forest spectator points, a free spectator pass to the Silverstone Superstage at Epic, a free volunteers welcome pack with a range of vouchers, and free entry to the post-event function on the 6th of May. So if you're interested in getting closer to the rally action and being a rally volunteer, one of those volunteer people that helps out with the Rally of Canberra, you can call the volunteer hotline on 02-6205-2444 or log on to the rally's site at www.roc.com.au. Subaru Rally of Canberra on the 4th, 6th of May, and we're looking forward to that one, I can tell you. Should be great to see Possum Bourne and Canberra's own Neil Bates going hammer and tongs around the forests of Canberra.
If you think they're going fast around the forests of Canberra, cop this. A Sydney drag racer, Andrew Cowan, has recorded the fastest ever speed by an Australian, the 21-year-old clocking 322.42 miles per hour. That is 518.8 kilometres per hour. His K&N Filters top fuel dragster ran at the Houston Raceway Park in Texas last weekend. Cowan qualified in sixth position, So even that time was only sixth best on the day. At the NHRA O'Reilly Nationals with a 4.598 second elapsed time for the standing quarter mile, but was beaten in first round eliminations by a fellow Aussie, David Grubnik of Brisbane, when his car slowed to a 4.776 second run. After qualifying, he was confident he would be able to advance through the elimination rounds, but the change in weather conditions caught us out, Cowan said. Despite having lost to Dave Grubnik in the first round, the times and speeds the K&N Filters car ran in qualifying were very encouraging. We are now consistently qualifying in the top eight of the 16 car fields, and our car is running faster and more consistent with each passing event. The K&N Filters team stayed over in Houston to test following the O'Reilly Nationals, and a 4.6 second elapsed time coupled with a 319 mile per hour terminal speed indicates that the team should be a threat to win in an upcoming event.
And they've been testing once again for the British Touring Car Championship. They're running at the Brands Hatch Indy Circuit on Wednesday of this week. As it was, Vauxhall and Peugeot went head-to-head in the first testing session that they've had on a track at the same time in what were reasonable conditions. The track was a bit damp at Brands Hatch, but as it was the Vauxhall Astras, taking out the top three times for the day with Ivan Muller, Jason Plato and James Thompson driving the privately egg-backed Vauxhall Astra, taking out the top three places. But then it was Matt Neal in his first major outing in the Peugeot 406 Coupe, who was just under a second slower than the fastest man around the circuit, who was Muller. It was more interesting the fact that Peugeot were happy with that result, as the Peugeots had a incomplete gearbox. Not having the usual six gears, they hadn't had all the parts provided, they were running with a five-speed gearbox, and they reckon there was more to come from the team and the cars. So things looking good for the British Touring Car Championship. Top production car driver of the day was James Kay in a Honda, and he was 0.8 of a second behind the nearest of the touring class cars. So I reckon that's going to be quite an interesting championship with the way it'll work out over the year. And we'll hopefully be catching up with Matt Neal, talk to him about his Peugeot testing sometime in the coming week, and we'll have him on next week's show.
We should talk about some interesting goings on in Brazil. Of course, Interlagos, the scene for today's Formula One race. Overnight, Mark Webber went from 10th place to 2nd in his Formula 3000 drive with Supernova. Unfortunately, he found out that it was all to no avail, as a passing manoeuvre, whilst deemed under the safety car, was seen to be illegal, and that stripped him of the 6 points that he had earned for finishing second. And if you remember, the Interlagos circuit is quite a sweeping circuit that is a very fast entry onto the main straight. The pit entrance is before the last corner. The pace car pulled off. Mark made the move before coming back to the stripe, if I can use an American term, and of course that's all she wrote. He was disqualified subsequently at the end of the event after driving right through the field, and I hope you're going to mention about how dangerous it is at Interlagos so I can play this clip.
Well, Interlagos is a very dangerous place, as a number of drivers have found in qualifying, and one of the people who even found it dangerous was Jaguar team manager Bobby Rahal, who got knocked over by a falling camera. Last year it was the signage and hoardings falling on the track. This year it's camera positions nearly falling on team managers. But Brazil has been a dangerous place. A lot of the team members complaining about security in Brazil, particularly some of the young gangs that run rife over there. Unfortunately for all the beauty of the place, they do have some social problems when they come in. As it was, one of the gentlemen from Minardi had some problems, one of the team managers there.
And Tom Lees.
Tom Lees, and this is what he had to say about his problems in Brazil.
I went into the centre of town to change some money at a bank in the centre of town, because that's the only place that you can get to that had money. Came out of the bank, I had a taxi waiting with the engine running 10 metres from the front door of the bank. Got in the passenger seat. The window was open from when I'd got out, so there's a mistake. There you go. A second later, three guys pulling me out of the window with a gun to my head and just generally roughed me up and wanted the money that I had stuffed down my shirt. so it's very difficult to get there. If they'd have just pointed the gun through the window and said, give me the money, I'd probably given them the money. But because it was such confusion and we were fighting and one thing and another, they didn't get the money. They ripped the watch off my wrist and stole my sunglasses and in the end went away. So that's it. My back is hurt and my neck and I'm bruised left, right and centre. That's all really. And like a bit of cuts here and there, but nothing serious. I'm not shot through the head, which is probably a bonus.
Tom Lees from Minardi speaking about his experiences at the Interlagos and in the city around Interlagos in Brazil there. That report coming to us courtesy of the BBC.
And of course, last weekend rallying was in Spain. And once again, we had our man on the scene, Greg Strange. And this is his report on the Rally of Spain.
Didier Auriol has had a lean couple of seasons. The 1995 world champion last won a world rally in 1999 in China. But for now, the Frenchman has tasted success again, and with his teammate Gilles Panizzi finishing second, Peugeot take maximum points from Spain. Mitsubishi benefit from Tommy Mäkinen's third place. He's extended his lead in the Drivers' Championship. He now leads Carlos Sainz 24 points to 17, and Mitsubishi lead Ford 39-21 in the manufacturers. Scotland's Colin McRae failed to score. He retired on Friday, and England's Richard Burns finished outside the points once more. Citroën will rue the problems which forced Jesus Puras out of the rally and dropped Philip Dugalski down to fourth. So victory for Peugeot and for Auriol. Next stop, round five, Argentina.
Greg Strange from the BBC with that report. We'll look forward to speaking to Greg next week on the show. In fact, to also find out about the season so far from his perspective. We've got plenty more coming up on Inside Motorsport, including Greg Strange. Our man in South Australia, Dave Langfield, will have a chat to us about the goings-on at the Clipsal 500, next weekend's big event on the calendar. And we also will have a chat with Chris Nixon about the launch of the Butte Utes.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
Buying a home? Get an Aussie Legal information kit. Got yourself a traffic offence? Get an Aussie Legal information kit. It's not legal advice, it's good legal information. And it's written in everyday language by experienced lawyers to help everyday Australians understand just about any legal issue. Aussie Legal is Australia's up-to-date online information and law firm referral service. Aussie Legal's information kits cover over 100 areas of the law and could possibly save you from unnecessary legal action and costly mistakes. From small legal questions to big legal issues, your first step is an Aussie Legal information kit. Quick, easy and affordable legal information for everyday Australians for only $49.95 plus postage and handling. Complete with a free internet download of any other Aussie Legal info kit.
Here's how to order. Call this number now, 1-800-00-1194. Write the number down, 1-800-00-1194. Call now, 1-800-00-1194.
Sponsors of Triple S.
Hi.
Good morning.
I need a clock that has more time.
More time?
My dad says he wishes he had more time with me.
Oh, well, maybe if you brought his watch in, I could squeeze just a few extra moments between, say, 3 and 5.
And I could put the 3 where the 11 is so I could get out.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
Well, getting ready for Le Mans, as always, in June of this year. It seems to be not long ago that we were seeing Le Mans last time round. We're into it again. But Cadillac has started testing on its new car a revamped North Star Le Mans prototype car. The car was shaken down at Carolina Motorsport Park Road Course in Kershaw, South Carolina, and underwent 2 days of testings. Last year's Le Mans was Cadillac's first at the LaSalle circuit for over 50 years, but its cars were well off the pace during the Le Mans 24 Hours race last year and suffered a range of reliability problems. Team Cadillac are planning to enter 2 North Stars in the French Long Distance Classic on June 16th to 17th this year. They've made some big changes to the chassis and the engine, and they're confident the changes are a big step in the right direction from where they were last year to bring the car up to the highest level of competition. Team program, which has been led by Wayne Taylor and Max Angelelli, is going to continue before the team heads off to France for the official pre-race test session on the 6th of May. The Cadillac North Star has been revamped from end to end for 2001 by its technical team director, Nigel Stroud. So they've already started work on a totally new car for 2002. So things looking quite interesting there for Le Mans, with a Cadillac getting things underway. Moving back to the British Touring Car Championship, there's talk that Aaron Slight, a motorcycle racer, is planning to move over from two wheels to four, and he's planning to do at least six races with the Peugeot British Touring Car squad during the coming year. So he'll be taking up that fourth slot that they've got there. He had previously had a touring car debut in the 1997 Tourist Trophy and had an impressive qualifying performance in a Honda Accord. But he was punted off the track at the top of the Corona curves by Ivan Muller's Audi and hit the wall quite hard. So something to look forward to there, New Zealander Aaron Slight making a move similar to what Wayne Gardner has done and Johnny Cecotto as well, moving from two wheels to four. And we look forward to seeing him on the circuit. I reckon he'll be quite a impressive driver to see on the track. As well, during the week, Toyota had their problems with their Formula One program having a major crash during testing, hitting the wall. Mika Salo, their test driver there, having a gearbox failure apparently and putting his car into the wall at 135 miles per hour. And that would be a case of some major work now for Toyota to find out exactly where that gearbox failed, and they reckon there's going to be more x-rays on the gearbox than there was going to be on the driver, Mika Salo. And Minardi, they've added some design people to their aerodynamics program, signing on former Prost Assistant Technical Director Loic Biguar to head up its aerodynamics department. Biguar will be based at the team's Faenza factory and will work closely with the Fondmetal wind tunnel facility at nearby Kusamura as the Formula One minnows strive to lift itself from the bottom step of Grand Prix Racing's pecking order. They expect that Biguar will play a major role in helping to develop this year's car as well as lay down the direction for the team's future aerodynamic programs. So Biguar had been with Prost and Ligier since 1990, so a major addition to Minardi already, that team moving upwards and onwards, we hope.
And of course, I was hoping to be able to also catch up with James Courtney, who is having his first run. I haven't seen his qualifying.
Second and fifth of the two races in the British Formula 3 in the UK today.
All right, and that's of course part of the Power Tour, so we might still be able to get a chance to speak to Paul Lawrence and or James Courtney, so just stick with us here on Inside Motorsport. There's a lot happening right around the world. Just when you think, gee, there's no motorsport on this weekend, you just have to turn the page.
And joining us now is Chris Nixon. Chris, for you, a busy one. First round for a number of your championships and also the first outing for the V8 Utes that Procar have been organising over the off-season.
Good afternoon, Colin. It will be a busy weekend. This is the biggest week. This is the biggest year yet for Procar Australia, which has been the organiser for many years, as listeners know, of the Australian GT Production Car Championship, still in 2001, sponsored by Century Batteries, incidentally. We now have the Nations Cup going into its second series with Jim Richards as the defending champion. And at Adelaide, we introduce also the V8 Brutes. These are the identically powered Falcon Commodore Utes, latest models, Commodore SS and Falcon XR8 Pursuits. Doing three demonstration races at Adelaide prior to the start of their six-round championship at Wakefield Park 4 weeks later.
Those guys, I'm sure, they'll be grateful of a bit of mileage there to get the cars shaken down before they head to Wakefield Park for that first round.
You're absolutely right. It has to be said that these cars have come together pretty quickly. In the retail market, the Falcon XR8 Utes and the Commodore V8 SSs are so popular that they've become pretty difficult for competitors to get hold of, Colin. We're pretty hopeful that we'll have nine on the grid for Adelaide and a few more again for Wakefield Park on the 5th and 6th of March, May, I should say, as the supplies from the factory ease up. But the biggest obstacle has been the extreme popularity of these cars in the retail marketplace. You see them advertised on television most nights, hence there is a strong demand, in order to build them, but they have been under construction now for some weeks at Wayne Park Automotive's workshop in Brisbane, and I would probably think that the boys are working flat out still on them as we speak, because the transporter is coming tomorrow morning to take them to Adelaide.
So they're working definitely to a hard deadline there to get the cars over on time.
Yes, they are, but they're going to be pretty exciting cars. a little unproven, although Wayne has managed to do a fair amount of track testing at Lakeside and Willowbank. But certainly I think we're going to see the real metal of these cars when they get out on the Adelaide street circuit. But they're going to be pretty exciting from what I've heard so far. Darren Palmer, who's driven a lot of things for his father, from Ferraris through to Formula 3 cars, for his father, Ross Palmer, has driven one and says that they go pretty well, despite the fact that they're used, and you might think that they're a little bit taily. He said they hang on generally extremely well indeed at the back end, but they are very controllable on the throttle with so much torque, and he said they're going to be extremely exciting to drive and to watch.
Mm. Now, of course, the Nations Cup guys, they're doing their usual thing over in Adelaide. They have a main race on Saturday evening, which goes into the dark, which apparently in the past we've seen some great photographs and footage of disc brakes glowing in the dark and headlights finding their way around the concrete canyons of Adelaide. So now, once again, some great racing. Of course, you're getting quite a chock-a-block grid there with the Ferraris, the Vipers, the Porsches and so on. Now, are there any other new cars due for this particular race meeting?
Yes, what's going to be the most interesting car to come into the Nations Cup ranks in the first of the season is the Lamborghini GTR of Paul Stokel. Stokel has upgraded from last year's SVR to the actual GTR that was driven in the Grand Prix Lamborghini Challenge races by Wayne Gardner. It's been taken over by Paul Stokel. They did some testing in the past week to try out a new air restrictor system, which will hold back the performance of the 6-litre V12 a little bit toward the Porsches and the Ferraris, and Paul's going to be out there for the first time in that, so I think that's going to be an absolutely fantastic car to see.
Mm. And it's obviously one where Paul Stokel is out there to prove a point, because he was doing very well down there in Melbourne in the support races for the Grand Prix, and he also wants to have a bit of a slug back at some of those guys who've been beating him in the past season.
Well, yes, the irony is that Paul was certainly the car of the meeting at the Grand Prix meeting in the three clean event Nations Cup races we had. He won two, and he would have won the third, I'm sure, if it hadn't been for a stop-go penalty. But it's horses for courses. A track like Albert Park was certainly one that was always going to suit the Lamborghini. It'll probably go pretty well at Adelaide, but then again, so will the Ferrari, and I think so will the Porsche GT3s of Jimmy Richards and Dominic Badinka and Peter Fitzgerald and a few other guys. So at this stage, for the first race of the season, I think a pretty open book on the Nations Cup, and then we'll go to some different tracks where the tables might be turned and the smaller and nimbler cars, such as the Porsches, might be the ones at the front of the field.
Mm. Moving on down into the GT Performance category, they've got some races as well down there in Adelaide. And, of course, those are the cars, things like your Mitsubishi Lancers, Subaru Imprezas and the like. So those guys, once again, they're going to be out trying to prove their thing in what is actually becoming quite a competitive class.
Oh, extremely competitive. There's some news in GT Production Car Championship this year, and that is that it's been broken into two separate series. What was Class A and Class B, which are the high-performance class and the sports touring class. We still have those two classes, but they race in their own series now, which is called GT Performance, and then Class C, D and E, which is V8 touring, 6-cylinder touring and 4-cylinder touring cars, respectively, race in a second series, which is called GT Production. And together, those five classes run over two series, comprise the Australian GT Production Car Championship of Century Batteries. So we'll see the GT Performance cars at Adelaide, and a number of new ones. Many people encouraged by the Bathurst winning performance of Ed Atkins Commodore GTS, and so we're going to see five at Adelaide, Colin. Ed Atkin has upgraded his own car to a VX from a VT model. We'll see a new one for Craig Dottis from Adelaide. We'll see one for the former Ford star Philip Pilates from Melbourne. Barry Morecambe has one. And there's a fifth one in there as well, so that's going to be pretty exciting. I think that's Peter Floyd's car. That's the fifth one. We're going to see one of the new Lancer Evolution 6s in the hands of Bob Hughes, who last year raced a Evo 5. And I guess a tremendous amount of interest is going to focus on the Class B cars in that category, which are the two VW Beetle RSIs being entered by Volkswagen Australia. a factory entry managed by Pee-wee Greg Siddle and with drivers Matthew Coleman and Tim Lay.
Yeah, that's an interesting one because they're actually looking towards a new version of the VW Beetle that's coming out in the future in terms of four-wheel drive and a more powerful engine. So for them, obviously, a learning year, getting used to the championship, getting used to the cars and Australian circuits, ready for what sounds like a much more full-on assault at the championship next year.
Yes, that's obviously the case. These cars are front drive only. They're a 2.8-litre naturally aspirated V6 with a 6-speed box, I gather. And they'll be pretty interesting. They have raced in Germany, these particular cars. They'll be slightly modified or slightly simplified in their specification for the Australian GT Production Car Championship. But they're going to be up against the usual squadron of Honda Integra Type Rs, which were the cars to beat in Class B last year. Something like three Toyota Celicas that have been brought into the series. Long-time campaigner Peter Boylan is driving a brand new BMW 325i. So we've got some very new and some very interesting machinery. There's heaps of Nissan 200 SXs, a few Evo 5s, an Evo 6, five Commodore GTSs. And although we won't see it at Adelaide at round two, we're looking very much forward to the Prancing Horse Racing Ford Mustang Cobra RA, which will debut at Goulburn.
I reckon that is going to be an interesting car to see on the track. It's been a while since we've actually seen Mustangs out there dueling in the top racing categories.
Well, it is. I mean, look what we've got here. We've got the return of the Holden and the Mustang competition in Class A of GT production in a national championship. I think that would probably take a lot of listeners back many years to the competitions of old. So we're really looking forward to it. It's just a cracker year all around, Colin. Nations Cup has gone from strength to strength in just 12 months. GT Productions is bursting at the seams with competitors both for the GT Performance Series and the GT Production Series. And the Utes are looking fabulous as well. They're going to be very exciting and certainly attracting a tremendous amount of interest. So a great year ahead of us.
Well, it looks like certainly next weekend down in Adelaide is going to be a busy time for the people from Procar Australia. No doubt Chris Nixon will be talking to you then to get some results and maybe speak to some of the drivers after they've been out there on that daunting Adelaide circuit.
We'll certainly do that, Colin. And over the next few weeks, we also want to tell you about Procar's first ever standalone meeting at Wakefield Park on the 4th to the 6th of May, just up the road, of course, from Canberra. And that's going to be very exciting. We've got some fantastic news about that, but it's going to be, I think, probably the best national race meeting that Wakefield Park has ever seen.
Chris Nixon, thanks for joining us this week.
Thank you. Good night.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
Join Ralph Smith and Tony Brennan Sundays from 8:30 for news on the Cosmos and the National Soccer League, the New South Wales State League and Bill Connan, and the international side of the World Game here on The Good Sports, 103.9.
Remember the feeling on that Friday night in September?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sydney 2000 Games of the 27th Olympiad.
100,000 spectators, over 12,000 performers, 4 billion viewers worldwide. The Sydney 2000 Olympic opening ceremony was an unprecedented spectacle of enormous proportions, a spine-tingling event, something that all Australians should and can keep forever, because now the entire unedited Sydney 2000 Olympic opening ceremony is available on video for only $39.95 plus postage and handling. The Sydney 2000 Olympic opening ceremony on video. Call now.
Here's how to order. Call this number now, 1-800-00-1194. Write the number down, 1-800-00-1194. Call now, 1-800-00-1194.
Sponsors of Triple S.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
Well, as we mentioned, the Formula One is underway. Well, it's not underway, but it will be getting underway in the early hours of this morning at Interlagos. And, of course, I played you a little bit from that press conference before, but we'll hear the whole Formula One press conference with the top three drivers. Of course, the Schumachers making up the front row. And we first hear from Michael about qualifying on the pole, the seventh time in succession.
The qualifying situation in the last moment, and not too early. I guess that some people, particularly yesterday, were driving with low fuel level, and that makes the picture looking different to what is the normal facts. But we know pretty well from when we see lap times and we compare things where we stand, and we knew it would be tight, but we knew we had a chance, and finally we did it. And obviously it's a great pleasure to see my little one next to me.
But now that's your seventh pole in a row, and the previous six poles have produced a race victory. Do you think it's put you in good stead for tomorrow?
Generally, we are in good state. We know from testing, from races, that our car is very competitive, probably the best in the field, I'd say. And if we don't do mistakes, if nothing unusual happens, then there's no reason why we shouldn't have the opportunity to win. But having the opportunity and finally do, there's two separate things. And we have to see how difficult Ralph or Mika or other guys will make the job to me during the race.
Thank you, Michael. Ralph, congratulations on your second place. Notice just at the end that you and Michael were comparing tyres. Obviously, Michael's on Bridgestone and you're on Michelin. How good a tyre was the Michelin today for qualifying?
Well, I mean, looking at the results, can't be that bad, actually. There's always things to improve, but, I mean, except Melbourne, where we had a little struggle, Michelin supplied us with very good tyres so far, and I guess, especially in the race tomorrow, they will look even a bit better.
Looking ahead to the race, you have very good straight-line speed from your BMW engine. How do you think that's going to affect the way you race? Because you're going to be very hard to overtake, so providing you make a good start, you should be in a good, strong form.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we try our best, actually, for tomorrow. I think I'm in a good position, although I'm on the dirty line on the inside, which is not always perfect, especially here. But we'll see. I think if I have a good start, it should be difficult to overtake me. I mean, Mika can tell you, I guess, from last race how difficult it was. I mean, that's a good advantage for us, yeah.
Thank you very much, Ralph. Mika, you've been on pole here the last three visits. Not to be this time. What do you put down the reason for not being on pole today?
Well, it's very simple. You know, Michael was just quicker. we couldn't find the right balance with the car. And that's why obviously it wasn't giving us the able to push the car quick enough to be on pole position today.
Now, right at the end, all the top six drivers chose to go out in the final, I think, 4 minutes. Do you think that was to the detriment of setting a good time? Did you encounter any traffic on those closing laps?
Yeah, the reason was really just to get the clear run and to wait when the slower cars do their run and come in. There is always a big risk to go in the last minute, because if something happens all on the track or something, or yellow flags, you're going to lose your run. But that risk has to be taken. And it didn't work out 100% for us, because we didn't get the pole, but it was okay.
Okay, Mika, thank you very much. Now back to Michael. Looking ahead to the race tomorrow, as we can see looking here, you have three different teams on the front three on the grid. How do you view the race?
Well, first to finish, that's the major thing, and I like to finish and I like to score the points. If we can, we want to have another victory, but you know, every good series will have an end at one stage. There's always up and downs. We have been seeing a very long duration of up. I hope we continue to see that for a while, but we find out.
Thank you very much, Michael.
And that's where we leave the press conference there. And well, it is going to be an interesting track. It's an interesting layout, and it's very, very fast. But the start will be an interesting one. Which brother will get the best start, and are they both as pig-headed as each other? Michael's pig-headed. Is the brother as pig-headed as is the younger brother as pig-headed as the older brother, is what I'm trying to say.
And of course, the interesting thing is that for Michael Schumacher, he has one more pole position to gain in a row, the next race meet he goes to. If he can do that, he equals Ayrton Senna's record for 8 pole positions in a row. And that'll obviously put him well up there in the record books. But of course, as you were saying, he's not on the best side of the circuit for the start. It's the dirty side of the circuit. And they reckon that BMW engine has a heap of grunt. Therefore, I'd say it's going to be very interesting to see how things work out for now the two Schumacher brothers. And who knows, it might be the night for somebody else to win if they both take each other out in the first corner.
I can see that actually happening, I really can. But before then, we should have a look still to come on Inside Motorsport. Phil Brannigan and, of course, Dave Langfield over there in South Australia. We'll be back with more after this break.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
Join Ralph Smith and Tony Brennan Sundays from 8.30 for news on the Cosmos and the National Soccer League, the New South Wales State League and Bill Collins, and the international side of the World Game here on The Good Sports 103.9.
The 27th Olympiad were the best games ever. Now, you can have your own personal memento. The Olympic highlights, Sydney 2000. This official video record captures the magic moments that epitomised the spirit of the Olympics. Share the elation of winning gold. Relive the disappointment, the heartbreak that goes with not achieving your dream. Admire those who had the guts and determination just to be there. And enjoy the exhilaration that unified Australia in this collector's edition special release video. The Olympic highlights, Sydney 2000. Yours for just $44.95 delivered to your door. Or in three easy interest-free payments of just $15 each. The Olympic highlights, Sydney 2000, just $44.95.
To order, call National Direct now on 1-800-246-868. Write the number down, 1-800-246-868. Call now, 1-800-246-868.
Sponsors of Triple S.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
Next weekend, the action moves to Adelaide and the Clipsal 500. And joining us now on the line is our Adelaide correspondent, David Langfield. Dave, once again, you guys have got it lined up with what's going to be, by all sounds, another great weekend down there in Adelaide. And, of course, the main event, the Clipsal 500 for the V8 Supercars, looks to be probably a very good field and some great racing as usual.
Yeah, well, if anything, the first round was anything to go by at Phillip Island last weekend. Should be some great stuff, particularly with Lowndes now having something to prove with the Ford team and the results he was posting in the first round. So that's going to be something to watch for sure. And up against his old, what's now really his arch rival, Mark Scaife in the Holden race team. Scaife obviously there to defend his race win from last year. As once again with the now the third Clipsal 500, second Clipsal 500, but third Adelaide 500, we've got a packed program. Full of support events. In this case, this year we've got a few new ones, but the old ones like Formula Holden, Nations Cup, and actually this year we've got on Saturday night, it'll be obviously run mainly in the dark from 6.30 to 8 o'clock, a 90-minute race for Nations Cup. And I think the last time we did the night race on Saturday night, it was the GT Productions, which I was a little bit disappointed personally. We didn't have the Nations Cup cars in there with them, so this time we have actually got Nations Cup at night, so that'll be a little bit like the old Le Mans GT class running at night there. Other supports we've got is obviously GT Production. We've got corporate carts for those people who've got plenty of money and can buy themselves a drive. The new one this year is the Ute Muster, which is the Ford and Holden Utes, so that should be quite interesting. I think that's pretty much it does list them as races, but I'm not sure if that's actually going to be more of a demonstration thing until that thing gets itself sorted out. Celebrity Challenge, this year we've got Fords, they're all actually in Ford Lasers, and I've just actually come from the track about an hour ago, and some of the cars are actually already been set up down there in a marquee, and we've actually got them painted up in the full V8 race teams, even though they're all lady drivers. I think they're all have to be amateur drivers, but they're all ladies. It's all ladies challenge, and they're actually done up in like the Pertec Falcon, the Cat Caterpillar Ford. They're all actually done up like the full V8 team, so it's quite interesting to see they've actually painted all and put the decals on the cars to make them look like the full V8 cars. One thing with that though, apparently it was supposed to be Ford versus Holden. We're looking at Holden Astras. The last minute I hear that Holden's, because they had a 1.8, I think it's a 1.8 litre motor in the Holden, and the Ford does a 2 litre, Holden thought, well, we're a bit short on horsepower, we probably won't have a chance here, so they seem to have pulled the pin at the last minute, so we're looking at all Ford. So unfortunately not the old Ford-Holden rivalry translated from down into the V8s to the celebrities, but still should be a great event there, and let's hope we'll see a bit cleaner racing than we saw in Melbourne on the Z3s.
Okay, the big thing there of course is Jill Johnson, the wife of Dick Johnson, and Natalie Lowndes, the wife of Craig Lowndes, fronting up to race there, and that, of course, the husband's both giving them some information about things to do and not to do.
Yes, coaching. So one wonders whether we'll have a bit of the Darrell Eastlake style onboard coaching happening there. We hope not. One of the things, Legends demo, I'm not really sure what that is, whether it's what's happening with it. We haven't got any writings on that in the program. I've just picked up a program. Legends, I don't know if it's the same as the actual Legends that run at the Calder Park Thunderdome, the little, I think they're 5/8 scales. One stage was talk of actually doing V8s, and I don't know if that's the one. Perhaps you guys can look into that one for us, but certainly we'll be able to better report on it next week when I see them, let you know exactly what it is.
I think that could be the touring car Legends series demonstrations, which
It is a demonstration. This is a demonstration.
Which is Alan Moffat back in his Coca-Cola Mustang, Beachy, Gagan,
yes.
And all those names and people from years ago.
Yep.
And I think they've even got I think it's Alan Hamilton in his Porsche 911 SR, I think it was, or one of those cars from years and years ago. Cars of the 60s and 70s, touring car greats, and no doubt these guys, once they get back on the track, they'll forget that it's supposed to be just a demonstration.
Oh, they'll forget all the aches and pains and everything else, and they'll be young drivers like they were in their heyday, so that should be good to watch as well. Today they've actually had down at the track a family fun day, which was pioneered last year. We did a car rally, a 100-year car rally last year before the event, and this family fun day, but Harris Garth sponsor that down at the track. There's on-track demonstrations, and it's a family day, sort of a bit of a wet your appetite thing for the for people with a last minute decision of, oh, do I go or don't I go, sort of get them down to the track, get them in a bit of the atmosphere, and it's good. I think it's a free day. I think they were talking about there's a walk tour around the track, a gold coin donation to just walk around the track for charity. So a few things on track already down there, because the preparations are pretty well completed. I think we know how to build a racetrack by now here in a short space of time. So yeah, they've done a bit of a promotional activity there today. One other interesting thing, the Office Nightclub here in Adelaide is having a big Kev night. I think it's next Saturday night. And he's got, I think it was Friday night, they had a mock-up of the car, the big Kev Commodore, Paul Morrison's car, parked outside of the nightclub, and they're having the Kevettes. You can go along if you're a young, attractive female and audition to be one of the big Kev girls, by the sound of it. I don't know if they actually make it out onto the grid come race day, but it's an audition to be a Kevette.
I think that one could be an interesting one. I'm sure you'll go and cover that one in depth for us, Dave.
Oh, I might have to go and see if I can get on the judging panel for that one.
Yeah, well, I suppose you've got the credentials for that one.
That's right.
Now, of course, there's some other news come out from Adelaide this week about the other event that was held down there over the new year, and things that Don Panoz is still not a happy chappy.
No, I only caught a brief thing on the news because I've been up in Queensland for the last week or so, and I caught it when I came back. Murmurings now that Panoz was still quite adamant that he had a contract with our state government here, and the word's threatening legal action now. So where that takes us, I don't know, and how far it's going to go, whether it's just Don sounding off and perhaps saying, you know, the parting shot of to the state government here, I'm still not happy with it, or whether it actually is something he intends to go ahead with. So as I said before when we spoke about it last, we've not heard the last of this, and hopefully one day all the truth will come out with it. But I mean, that could cost the state dearly. It's already going to cost the state dearly in as far as trust is concerned, because if I was a potential investor in South Australia, I mean, what's the word of the government? We've had during the week, we've had also now the taxpayer's going to have to fund the Darwin Railway because they couldn't get a private backer for that. So all sorts of speculation and rumour flying about as to who's paying for what at the moment.
Well, hopefully they will get some profit out of next weekend's Clipsal 500 with the hotel and motel rooms being full, and hopefully they won't get too much revenue from the boys in blue with the cameras.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it is a good thing for the state. I think any motor race here is, as far as the flow-on effect for people spending money and eating, like all the East End, Mutt Putt Street, and then they're having a party. I think they're already advertising a street party up there as well, and they get all the pubs and the food places and that, and they actually have marquees and that on the street, and they shut the street down. It's just one big street event, and you bring your family along and everything. I think it's usually Friday and Saturday night. And it's just a big atmosphere thing, and people spend the money there, and it's good for the state's economy. So the flow-on effect is always something that you find very hard to actually count, you know, the actual dollar value of, but it certainly is there putting it into the state economy, and we're happy for that.
Well, Dave, we'll chat to you next week after the races have been run and won, And this year, of course, you won't have a bad back from trying to push all those old historic Formula Ones. It'll just be those heavy metal guys from the past.
Oh, that's it. So hopefully we'll have a bit of luck this year, certainly too with the weather, last year's downpour. So he's hoping for a big weekend. And it always is a great weekend, and people turn out in the hundreds of thousands basically over the weekend. It is a really well-attended event. It'll be great fun as usual, I'm sure.
Okay, Dave, thanks for joining us this week on Inside Motorsport.
Thank you, Colin.
Again, taking time out from putting another edition of Motorsport News to bed is the editor, Phil Brangan. Phil, once again, another great issue of Motorsport News, and this time your cover story is Clip Their Wings.
Well, yes, Colin, it's interesting that a number of the drivers brought it up themselves of their own volition at Phillip Island, saying that there wasn't enough overtaking, and Phillip Island is pretty well a one-lane racetrack, and they seem to think it's endemic of what's going on in V8 supercar racing at the moment.
So the idea being, clip the wings, less downforce, therefore more overtaking.
That's right. Clip the wings, let the car slide a little bit more, let's see who can really drive, wear the tyres out a little bit more so there's a little bit more overtaking at the end, and generally it's a bit like what people have been saying about F1, less downforce, more overtaking. Let's hope that works out.
Well, I suppose it's the story. If we get to the stage of less downforce, more mechanical grip through good tyres, and see, who can really drive a car.
Well, that's right, and that's what the drivers want to do. They want to be able to drive, and there have been some drivers like Mark Scaife, who's usually the voice of reason on these sorts of things, saying, hey, let's not move too quickly. And let's face it, V8 supercar racing is as competitive as any form of touring car racing has ever been. But if this is what the drivers are saying, let's listen, and maybe there'll be some sort of middle ground.
Now, of course, one of the issues that you bring up is the fact, of course, bye-bye to the FAI as the chief sponsor for the 1,000-kilometre race for the V8s in October.
Well, Jeff Jones from IMG, who's the motor racing manager, made the point that the contract had expired and he was expecting to have a new sponsor lined up in the next couple of months anyway, but HIH, the parent company of FAI, has fallen over. I always get them mixed up with the FIA for some reason. And he's out to ensure, excuse the pun, that the new sponsor takes as active a role in the big event as FAI did when they were at the helm for 3 years.
Yeah, so obviously they're probably out there and they've probably got a few people lined up already to put their dollars down and to support the event.
Mate, we're going to have to stop this. You're breaking up. I can't understand what you're saying.
I'm breaking up, am I?
Yeah. Are you on a cordless phone?
No, I'm on the real life phone here.
Okay, well, just make sure you wind the tape back.
Yes, okay. The other thing, of course, in this issue, covering the ALMS, and where does it go to?
A lot of rumours about the ALMS. Strong rumours coming out of Sydney. Strong rumours people in Brisbane are very confident, and people in Melbourne are very confident. The only people who don't seem to be sticking their paw up are the people in South Australia, strangely enough. So I'm not prepared to say I'd jump off a roof if the race ended up in Adelaide, but let's not forget Perth as well. Perth seems to be a good bet for maybe 2003, but let's wait and see what happens with the ALMS. And interesting to know that a few people have already echoed the sentiment that who cares? I mean, sports car racing's had three cracks in Australia. They've all been relatively unsuccessful. And let's wait and see what happens and how much money can Don Panos spend on his sports car series.
Mm. Now, one of your interesting items in this issue is a story about an Aussie, Chris Dyer, who's working with Ferrari this season, and what it's like for him to work with the team from Maranello.
That's right. It must be a dream come true for a kid from Bendigo to be looking at cars and thinking, oh, gee, one day I'm going to work for Ferrari. Goes off to work for Holden and ends up at TWR. Well, TWR in the UK, of course, that was the jump from the Holden racing team. Engineers Damon Hill at Arrows. And we had a nice picture in the magazine of Damon Hill's Arrows overtaking Schumacher's Ferrari. And now, of course, he's a race engineer on Schumacher's Ferrari at Maranello. And it's a good story. It's one of those stories that whether you want to be an engineer or a race driver or a journalist or a radio personality, almost head star, you can get what you want. You might live on the other side of the world, but who cares? Have a crack at it. It's great.
Well, the beauty of it is that for a young fellow, who's sort of working his way through motorsport, to reach the pinnacle with what is currently the reigning world champions, what more could you ask for?
That's right. I mean, not far from your part of the world. Come down the Hume Highway a bit, or the Federal Highway, go down to Wodonga, and there's a TAFE school going on there, and they have a motor racing engineering course. And I guarantee that out of the first three intakes of that course at Wodonga TAFE, one of those kids is going to end up working in Formula One day. So one of those kids, 17, 18 years old, growing up in Wodonga or Albury, dreaming of working for a Formula One team, you can do it. You can do it. All you got to do is live your dreams and go and get them, just like on the know for your ads.
Mm. Now, of course, you've got some good coverage in there as well of the Rally of Catalunya, as you call it, the pain in Spain. But interestingly enough, the word going around that there's talk of the people who are currently one of the teams dominating in World Rallying, Peugeot, potentially moving into the Australian Rally Championship, which, of course, kicks off this weekend.
Yes, it does, over in the West. Wouldn't it be great to see a 206 going around in the ARC? And I know that Peugeot are very keen on having that car here, and ironically enough, now there's talk that in the WRC team, the 206 will be replaced by the 307. But it would really be the boost the series needs. We're starting to get a bit of stalemate now in Australian rallying. We've got Possum Bourne versus Neil Bates. We usually know who's going to win that, and then there's a gap to the rest. If Peugeot could slide in there, whether it's Neil Bates driving it or whether it's Simon Evans driving it or somebody else, think of the boost that would give the ARC. It would just be great to go out there and stand in the forest and see these cars go through. I think it would be a great boost for the series.
Well, when you compare, add as well, you know, the potential for Hyundai with one of their Hyundai Accent WRC cars, which are also starting to move themselves up through the rallying grid, as one might say, things could look very, very good for the people out there in the forest.
That's right. Alistair McRae, he's the McRae who finishes events,
rather than the man who doesn't finish the event.
Isn't he having a shocking season? And Collins just came out and said, no, I'm not leaving. I'm not even thinking about leaving Ford. Which means, of course, in racing driver speak, you know as well as I do, he's thinking of leaving Ford. But it would be great to see. I mean, the more WRC cars, the better. Hey, they are like Formula One cars in the forest. They are expensive. I think Peugeot are talking about $750,000. But wouldn't it be great? You know, in the Rally of Canberra, see him there. In the Rally of Melbourne, see him there. Fantastic.
Of course, the one that would probably be very interesting to see would be the Mitsubishi Lancer Evo. I'm sure that there's plenty of those floating around at Mitsubishi Australia. If they could only get back in the black, could afford to do it then?
Well, it would be nice. Mitsubishi is heading in the right direction. The problem is, Rally Art has said, and Mitsubishi from Japan have backed them up and said, if you want to run a car in a domestic championship, no problem at all. It's got to be maintained by Rally Art. That means you've got to fly the car home every time between events. It's got to go home to Europe to get fixed. Under the direction, of course, of Andrew Cowan. So, it makes it a very expensive proposition. It's not like Toyota coming out here with a WRC car and setting up Neil Bates in Canberra, your part of the world, to work on the cars. It's a hideously expensive way of doing it, but it's the way Mitsubishi want to go about it, because if they go and do a WRC car in Australia, or a Group A car, they don't want to lose.
Mm. Now, mentioning Toyota, of course, you had the coverage of Toyota showing off their brand new Formula One car at Paul Ricard in France, and of course Mika Salo then going out promptly and baptising it against the wall. But of course Toyota, they're people who are definitely pouring some big dollars into motorsport and their F1 plans.
Well, we've heard numbers of $280 million US being spent so far, and it's mind-boggling. I believe there's now talk that Toyota will put in a second wind tunnel. Some Formula One teams like Jaguar don't even have one. And 8 engine dynos going 24 hours a day. Now, using the theory of an infinite number of monkeys using an infinite number of typewriters, you've got to think sooner or later that Toyota are going to make progress. And there's a lot of naysayers around the world saying you can't base a Formula One team in Germany. But these are the same people who 12 months ago said that BMW can't build a Formula One engine in Germany. And unless I'm mistaken, BMW in 1 year now has the best engine in Formula One. So I'm not going to say that Toyota aren't going to be successful. It might take them 2 or 3 years, and it might not be with Salo and McNish as drivers, but I think that Toyota are going to make their presence felt in Formula One, just as they did in Champ Car racing, and that took them 3 or 4 years.
Well, I must admit, if you look at Toyota's pedigree in terms of where they've gone with Champ Car racing, where they're going with their Le Mans cars, and World Rallying, they don't sort of stint at trying to get the maximum out of their cars and their team.
Yeah, that's right. It's an interesting situation. Formula One and motor racing in general has always been about small teams which react fast to change. And big companies aren't very good like that. They're like big ocean liners. They take a long time to turn around. But Toyota could be different. They could be setting up not so much a copy of McLaren or Jordan or Benetton, and let's face it, at the moment, nobody wants to copy Benetton. But they might be setting up a copy of Ferrari. And Ferrari are now, without question, the dominant force in Formula One racing. It might all change in a few races in Spain when everybody runs traction control. And I'm not suggesting at the moment that some people are and some people aren't.
But Toyota could be a clone of Ferrari, and that would be interesting because Toyota have the financial clout to take on Ferrari at their own game.
Yeah, and I reckon that's going to be an interesting one to see for the start of the 2002 season. Of course, this issue, you've got lots of other stories. You've got the Formula One news from Malaysia and so on. But, of course, you're probably getting ready to pack your bags next thing at the end of the week, likely head over to Adelaide for the Clipsal 500, which will be the main feature of your issue after this one.
The main show, indeed. It's going to be a cracker race. I suppose people who are listening to tonight's broadcast, whether they're on the radio or on the internet, have probably watched about Superstars. All the drivers are looking forward to it. And what a setup. You've got Scaife and Lowndes, the two dominant forces from the first two Adelaide 500s, first and second in the points. You've got Tander, Ingall, all sorts of people, Barguana, playing catch-up in the points. You've already got new drivers starting to make their presence felt, like Marcus Ambrose. This joint's going to be sold out. If you haven't got accommodation or if you haven't got a ticket, you better hurry because it's going to be elbow to elbow in Adelaide. And I think this is going to be the touring car race of the ages. So I think already now, people like Barry Sheen have said it's the best touring car event in the country. I think maybe it's possibly going to put off something like the Nürburgring in Germany as maybe being the marquee touring car event in the world. And I think that I know people are coming from overseas for this race, and I think that the Adelaide 500 is going to be just a cracker.
And of course, the interesting thing this year as well is the fact they're putting in the historic touring cars doing demonstration laps with a number of big names there, which is another attraction to go and attend that particular event.
It's always nice, isn't it, when people say, oh yes, we're just going to go out there and demonstrate the car and we're not going to take it very seriously. And they often do. It's a bit like the wives of the drivers, Jill Johnson and Nat Lowndes, saying, we're just going to go out there and take it easy. Yeah, right, that's what Katrina Roundtree said. Any time these people get on a racetrack, even old racing drivers, they know what to do. It's like a dog knowing the way home. They remember. And they'll go motor racing, so it's going to be a great weekend.
Well, Philip Brannigan, thanks very much for joining us again this week on Inside Motorsport. A great issue, once again, of motorsport news out in the newsstands now. And we'll just have to sort of hang out after reading this one from cover to cover for the next issue for all the latest news and views of what's happening.
Absolutely. And don't forget, Motorsport News is the one that didn't go up in price last week.
And it's also the one that tends to get it right more often.
Thank you.
Thank you, Phil Brannigan.
And, of course, Colin Ford joining Phil Brannigan there on the line. And we must thank all our guests, Fabio Ravioli and, Chris Nixon, Dave Langfield, Phil Brannigan, and the cast of thousands that make up Inside Motorsport each week. Of course, next week we will have all the Clipsal 500 news, particularly those support events who are so good. My apologies to Brenton Ramsey and Debbie Clark from Formula Ford and Formula Holden, but as you could tell, we were chock-a-block with everything else tonight, and with AFL season upon us, that means we're a little bit curtailed in our time. Because AFL on Triple S coming up right after this break. But for now, thanks for joining us, and I hope you can join us next time round on Inside Motorsport.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.